This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Sean Conahan, who's the founder and CEO of Intercasting Corporation. Welcome to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be here.
Why don't we get right into it? Tell us what Rabble is.
Rabble is a personal publishing platform for the mobile space. Take everything you know about blogging, and rather than try and cram that into a mobile phone, actually evolve it for the mobile space to include functionality that would be relevant for a mobile platform, essentially evolving communication.
Okay, let's back. Yeah, go ahead. Let's go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say philosophically. I think, you know, we're looking at the device in your pocket as being very different from, or at least evolving from, a cell phone, you know, in quotes, to what I'm calling a PMD or personal media device. I just don't think it's the right word to use anymore. You know, when I say cell phone, I think of a person-to-person voice communication device.
Right.
But I have the equivalent of a radio network, a film production studio, and broadcast network all in my pocket.
Right, exactly. Okay, and we're going to talk about how that works. Tell us, as by way of background, what is BREW, B-R-E-W, what it stands for, who developed it, what it's good for, and what you're doing with it.
Right. So BREW stands for Binary Runtime Environment for Wireless, and this is a Qualcomm proprietary standard that enables application developers like Intercasting Corp to build essentially software programs that that work on people's cell phones.
Okay.
So we're getting away from the sort of black box, you know, cell phone, and turning it into more of a white box, if you will, you know, looking a little bit more like a personal computer in your pocket. I should note that BREW is, as a Qualcomm proprietary standard, works on CDMA handsets and networks that have selected the BREW platform as their distribution mechanism. Notably, Verizon Wireless is Get It Now is a deployment of BREW.
Okay.
Other carriers like Singular, T-Mobile, in the U.S. Use a totally different standard called GSM.
Right.
And by and large, the analog for BREW in the GSM world is J2ME, which is Java to Micro Edition or Mobile Edition, depending on who you talk to, but it all basically does the same thing. Enables you to put software applications on phones.
Now, is Intercasting going to have a GSM a version of its of Rabble?
Yes, it is in production now and is anticipated to be available to the carrier community in late June or possibly early July, depending on our testing.
So, right, but for right now, people need to use Verizon if they want to do the BREW and they want to do a Rabble.
That's right.
Okay. How does one Rabble? Let's say, or are people Rabbling already?
No, the product was announced at CTIA in New Orleans, which was last month.
Right.
And the availability of the product to the industry is much different from being available to the user community. We work in a sort of a two-tiered business environment here. I guess in dot-com parlance, you would call it B2B2C, right? Business to business to consumer.
Right, so you sell it to the carriers.
That's right. We sell to the carriers, and then they sell it to their subscriber base.
Do you have some general idea about what the cost is going to be to the subscribers?
$3 a month to the end user, flat subscription. We chose that because it's a fair and relatively small number. The value is in the community, so you pay the small fee to participate, and then production and consumption is completely up to the user, as much or as little as you want.
So essentially it's a Rabble dial tone people get for $3.
It's a good way to look at it, yeah.
And okay, so what would you say the timetable is for when early adopters who really think this is great can get out there and start rambling?
Right. So we are finishing beta testing right now, and in fact, you can go to Rabble.com and sign up to be a beta tester right now if you're truly an early adopter.
Let's spell that for people. Rabble.
Rabble. RABBLE.com.
Okay.
Rabble incidentally means, according to Webster, the lowest or coarsest class of society.
Right. And I assume you're using this ironically.
That's right. We use that to indicate that we're talking about content generated at what we call the edge of the network or by, you know, ordinary users.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that as we go along. One aspect of Rabble is that it's location aware.
And that's right.
And in fact, you call yourself a location aware media networking operator.
That's right.
What does that mean exactly, location aware, and how does the system generate that, and how do the applications use it?
Right. So a user would designate his or her location, and there are a couple of ways to do this, either through LBS, which stands for location-based services, and this was an evolution of the emergency 911 requirement, where on a landline, you know, you know where my location is when I call 911.
Right.
With mobile phones, for a long time they didn't know how to locate you, and that caused a lot of trouble, particularly as more people started using cell phones.
Right.
So there was this mandated requirement to pass location information to the E911 infrastructure, and you can do this a couple of different ways. Technically, one would be just to put a GPS chip in a phone. Another one would be cell site triangulation, and frankly, I can't tell you exactly how that works,
right?
Except that it does, right? So this all happened as a way to improve user safety, which is a great thing. But you can also pass that information to a software stack like Brew for an application developer to take advantage of it. So now, if a user chooses to switch that on, essentially saying, you know, I allow Rabble to automatically locate where I'm at.
Right.
Then we'll take that information and sort of put you on a map, which is overlaid with our sort of map database, so we know where you are.
So in fact, yeah.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So another way to do it for carriers that have not deployed commercially available location-based services is simply to declare it. So a user would say, I'm in Los Angeles, or I'm at Harry's Bar and Grill in San Diego. You put yourself on the map,
right.
And then you declare sort of a sphere of influence around you, or a search radius that you want to define as your local area, and that becomes the world in which you search or interact.
Okay. Apart from the method of self-declaration of where you are, what you've just said is that the technology that was installed in order to provide safety for users by telling the network where they were is now being multitasked, essentially, so it can be used in as input to other programming, other applications to do other things.
That's right. A good example, if you have a Nextel phone, you can tap into their fleet management system. So all of your drivers in your trucks are driving around with Nextel phones, and they're beaming their location to some central location. You can sort of track them that way. That's a good commercial application for this. But if you start to think about the importance of location as a Z-axis, if you will, for a person and their communication, then you can start to see many invaded applications beyond that.
And it's a little bit, it's like personal RFID. It's essentially tagging the person so that the network knows where they are.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm presuming then that data is compared with or relates to a GIS, a geographical information system, that maps out various locales, and the intersection of a person's space with a GIS area then triggers certain other events. Is that how it works?
That is essentially how it works. The core construct is, I'm here, what's around me, and we return that information to the user. But rather than it being sort of a location-based Yellow Pages, right, which would be the same kind of thing,
right,
we're not connecting you to a static database of information that we licensed from, you know, Donnelly or something like that.
Although presumably you could, using this.
You could, absolutely. That's right, but that's another application that I'm not interested in building.
Right.
I'd rather connect people to other people.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot more value to be commuted to users in general by facilitating personal connections.
Okay.
And if you intersect that very notion with this trend we're seeing in user-generated content, right, blogging,
right,
and the fact that you're carrying around a mobile-connected camcorder with you,
right,
I think that's going to change the face of media in general. Right.
Okay.
People ask me often, you know, what does user-generated mobile media look like?
Right.
Right. And the best way to explain it is through some comparison. So television is something we all understand, right?
Right.
Television broadcasting is one way. One kind of media gets pushed to consumers, and the value of a channel is determined by how many people sit and watch it.
Right.
Right. Well, in the always-on, always-with-you mobile world, media is two-way. Right, you and I, ordinary people, create it, and location matters, because if there's anything that we do as mobile users, it's be mobile, right?
Right.
We walk around, we move around. So the value of a channel in this world is determined by how many meaningful connections it makes. And that's why we call our company Intercasting Corporation, as opposed to, you know, Broadcasting Corporation.
Right.
So every user gets their mobile channel, right? There are 500 channels and nothing's on. How about 5 million channels and nothing's on? But now your channel may contain a user's profile, your resume, pictures you took on vacation, video from the bar that you're at, maybe a list of your favorite restaurants, your school schedule. And now rather than people sitting back and watching your channel, people interact with it, you know, to organize a rally or find a job, decide on a hotel, pick a restaurant, form a study group, whatever.
So this allows smart mobs to go multimedia.
I'm glad you said that. That is basically the one sentence pitch.
Yes, well,
we want to enable people to use the tools that they have in their pocket to put them on a map and organize in any way that they see fit, rather than the traditional approach, which has been, wow, this phone is turning into like a small computer. It looks like a distribution channel. Let's repackage episodes of 24
right.
Paris Hilton videos and send it to people.
Right. Okay. Before we go on.
So my conclusion there is, you know, we're evolving personal communication to include multimedia, as you said,
right,
but also location, proximity, and contextual relevance. So in our future, location matters. Everyone becomes a storefront. Information is the new media, and personal networking, critically, is the new distribution.
Okay. Now, before we get into some the details about how these channels are created and used, people are going to want to know what they're going to need to do it. You said that Verizon is the only carrier that's going to have it first. The GSM carriers will have it soon. What about the handsets? Will all cell phones do this? Will smartphones, video phones, PDAs? What kind of device, as a genre, and what kind of specific devices are available to implement intercasting?
Right. We, from this point in time, we took a backwards compatibility approach to all of the handsets that could reasonably accommodate an application of this breadth. So there's a good chance that the phone you have in your pocket now will be able to download this application. Will be able to use it, you know, relatively effectively.
Now, is that just any Brew compliant phone? Do phones come Brew compliant, or do they need to download Brew as a platform?
No, the handsets come Brew compliant.
Okay,
right. So it's sort of if you have a carrier that has deployed Brew,
right,
that there's a good chance that you have a Brew compatible handset. So from this day forward, though, which is really, you know, where we focus our efforts, because, you know, people don't keep their handsets, but for 11 months anyway.
All right.
on average, anyway.
That's even shorter. That's even shorter than Moore's law is 18 months.
That's right. We look at a couple of different factors. One is camera phones. I think that's a sweet spot for an application like this. So we intend to support as many handsets as possible that have cameras on them. The good news is most of them from this day forward will have cameras or video cameras. The other thing is screen size, frankly.
Right.
You know, when you're dealing with a fairly intense amount of information, a lot of it visual, it helps to have a larger screen size, and so we target those handsets with large screen sizes. Another good thing is handset screen sizes are increasing, you know, with every new generation that comes out. So our handset support matrix, as currently envisioned across all carriers in North America, reaches into the hundreds. So there's a good chance, I think there's something like 85% compatibility across all handsets on carriers in North America anyway.
Okay, now does memory also matters here?
Not to the end user. Generally speaking, you know, the application is fairly small, and most of these phones don't really, they don't give the user the ability to sort of check how much available memory they have available. We're not quite at that,
right,
that computer kind of construct.
Right,
we are getting there.
I was more specifically referring, I think, to storing the video that people are going to watch. Are they going to essentially watch it streaming rather than downloaded?
Yeah, that's a good point. In that case, if a person wants to actually download video, then yeah, memory is going to matter. But you mentioned Verizon Wireless's VCast before.
Right.
That is a streaming service.
Right.
Right, and this is a massively multi-user server-based environment, and your handset is essentially a tool to access that server. So
right.
We anticipate that the bulk of content usage is going to be streamed as opposed to downloaded.
Right.
And frankly, that's a limitation of handset design today.
But, go ahead.
Go on.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I see more handsets coming out with, 512 megabyte, memory, removable memory chips.
Right.
And that sort of thing, and I think that's a trend for the future. But we'll evolve the application in line with the technical capabilities of the devices that we're developing for.
But the topology is essentially that the data will reside on your servers, and people
right.
will download it, but people will stream it to their handsets.
That's right.
But presumably, and we can maybe talk about this, if they want to build a library or buy the stuff, and we'll talk about that, when they're back at their home media center, they might be able to download it there, depending
Absolutely.
On what's arranged.
Yeah, the only limitation there, because we don't care if you download it or stream it.
Right.
The only limitation is the device that you have in your hand.
Right, okay. And the bottom line of what you've just said is that most, 85% of cell phones in circulation now are going to be viable for this platform, for this application.
Absolutely. If you can, if you can take a picture with your phone or download a game or something to it, chances are you've got the kind of handset that we're going to support. And that's, like I said, 85% of all handsets out there.
Okay, let's talk now a little bit more about, let me just make a reference to someone named Irwin William Thompson, who was a futurist in the 70s, and I guess he would be called a describer of contemporary reality now. He said that as technology improves through history, individuals become able to embody entire institutions themselves. And essentially what you've talked about now is that a person equipped with one of these handsets and a subscription to Ravel will be able to be a radio station, a TV station, a diarist, a newspaper, and all of those things, and be mobile at the same time.
That is absolutely true. That is our vision for the future as well, and we see it happening already. When you look at instances of citizen journalism where, people in the right time, I'm sorry, in the right place at the right time, have caught images and video that have captured, the attention of the world, you understand where we're going with this.
Right.
The the Rodney King beating video was compelling content for a great many people and had an impact on the world in general, at least our country. And that was a guy in the right place at the right time who happened to be carrying around his camcorder. Well, at the time, I don't know many people who carried around their camcorder, but now that it's in your pocket and the third thing that you leave your house with, right, your wallet, your keys, and your cell phone,
right.
The likelihood that you're going to be in the right place at the right time is greater, and the amount of content we expect to be captured by, you know, individuals is going to increase, and we've seen just recently an example of that when the tsunami ripped through Southeast Asia.
Right.
Right. All of the footage that we saw was amateur footage. All of the pictures we saw were taken by amateurs. A lot of them from their camera phones.
So in fact, this has the potential to be a very powerful media democratizing force.
Absolutely, but it could go a lot further than that as well. What if those people who got hit by the tsunami first had a place, a marketplace, if you will, to instantly upload their content to show it to the world?
Right.
Do you think the people who got hit by it 3 hours later,
right,
would have had an early warning system to get to, you know,
exactly,
50 feet of higher ground?
Right.
I mean,
so
that's all I'm talking
right.
about. Climb up a tree. You
so
know?
In fact, this empowers millions of people with the resources of CNN or News Corp, and makes it no longer necessary to depend on those large centralized global corporations for information.
We bill our company as a populist media company, which is exactly as you say. We're decentralizing the production and collection and distribution of media to the farthest edge of the network, which is a teenage girl with a mobile connected camcorder creating her own reality Mobi series, you
right.
know, from her handset.
Okay. Another example of what's happening here seems to be this. Of course, at the red carpets in front of premieres, there's the swarm of paparazzi with still cameras and video cameras and so on. But as I was watching, I think it was the procession of the Pope from one church into St. Peter's Basilica a few days ago, there were swarms of the pilgrims/tourists who were there with cell phones and snapping pictures of the Pope with their cell phones as he was being moved across St. Peter's Square.
Absolutely. You know what they're doing with those pictures that they're snapping? They're sending them to their friends.
Right.
They're not sending them to the world.
Right.
They're sending them to their friends, and this is an important precept to keep in mind around rabble and the way that we envision this.
Well, let's segue into that and talk about channels. What a channel is in your understanding, how they're set up and how they're used.
Right. So in your example of the procession of the, you know, the Pope at the funeral, I might on my channel have a number of different media types. One might be my blog, which would be textual, and another might be pictures I've taken, places that I've been, events, anything that is media that can be transacted between people, that can be created by an individual from the device that they have in their hand is contemplated on Rabble.
Okay.
So I'll take this picture.
Before I take the picture, have I set up an account with a unique a cutesy or a techie type name that says
that's
this
right.
is
it,
my
it
channel?
Works the same way that like an instant messenger client works. You can
okay.
set up as many screen names as you want,
right.
and each of those screen names has is basically a channel for you, and you can create a very robust profile if you'd like, telling a lot about you, or you can set up a very light profile that tells, you know, essentially nothing about you, and you just want people to rely on the media that you create to represent you, which is you know, either way is fine with us.
So presumably you have a range of those. You can be with your intimate friends and tell them intimate things. You can be with people you're looking for a job with and tell them certain other things. Or if you want to be essentially a public broadcaster, you can tell them nothing about yourself and just rely on your content.
And importantly, by creating different channels per person, you essentially segment those different worlds or aspects of your personality from each other.
Exactly right. You've got your private self, your family self, your local self, your world self, your business self, and so on.
That's right.
Okay. So this has important psychological implications as well, because people have the possibility to generate multiple images of themselves into different markets, essentially.
Right. Which we do today.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing that in the blogging space as well right now, and I think that is a natural evolution of self-expression. That, you know, there's a range of things we may express as individuals, and we have the wherewithal to know for which audience that may or may not be
appropriate,
fully appropriate.
Okay,
right.
So getting into the real specifics of it, how does a person set up a channel using Ramble for themselves?
It's very simple. Right from your handset, you would be taken through a registration process that asks you a few questions. What do you want your channel to be named? A little byline, if you will, sort of, you know, what this channel is about.
Right.
And then a little bit about yourself. And because you're doing it from your cell phone, we don't expect people to write, you know, paragraphs about themselves, like an online dating, you know.
Right. Well, can they recite themselves? Can they photograph or video themselves and introduce themselves that way and have that as a calling card within this channel?
Absolutely.
As the introduction to
That's right. Part of your channel is your profile, which
right.
contains your, you know, it can be your headshot or, like you said, in the future, a little video clip of yourself,
right.
That sort of thing.
Okay.
So, absolutely. Then you may wish to enter a few keywords. Keywords in the mobile space, I think, are very important because
right.
they're quick and easy to enter, but they can say a lot about you. If you like a band called Dashboard Confessional, that tells a lot about you.
Right. Right?
That you're into emo punk and that sort of thing, as
right.
opposed to, you know, the Bee Gees or something like that.
Right.
It's a very different kind of personality. So anyway, setup takes, you know, not but a few minutes, and then you're sort of up and running, and you just like you would set up a blogging site, you know, online or something like that, you start creating content. And back to your example of the Pope processional.
Right.
You know, you may be in that place at that time and take some pictures that you think would be interesting and post them to your channel. Well, the way this works is all pull, right? There's no pushing content to anyone. It's not like an email spam list or something like that.
Right.
You post the content, and then people subscribe to your channel.
Right. So you post it to your you send the still picture or the video clip or the audio clip. You post it to your channel.
To your channel.
To your channel.
And then people who are subscribers to your channel.
Right.
Will receive that content when they look at your channel.
Will they be notified when you post new content?
Yes, there's an inbox notification that, you know, such channel has posted new content. You asked me to tell you, so I'm telling you.
Right.
And you can choose to receive that passively, sort of every time you enter the application. You have a My Connection section that shows you, or actively, which will generate an SMS to your phone.
Right.
You know, when you don't have the application open, where you can go and open and check.
Right. I do that with Google News. People can sign themselves up, as I have, for Utopia Media notifications, and anytime there's an Utopia Media posting on the Google News site, people get an email telling them
yep.
that. And essentially,
same sort of thing.
You're talking about
same
the same
sort of
thing.
Thing.
All right, now, you've taken your pictures, made your videos, recorded your audio clips, you sent them to your channel. They're residing on a intercasting server somewhere, and you've been notified about it. What kind of control does the channel creator, producer, distributor have over who gets to see it, who gets to subscribe to the channel, and whether they get it for free, whether they pay a bulk a subscription rate for a month or so, or whether it's a pay-per-view access? How does that work?
Yeah, so we use the term subscription in its in its original meaning. We've in this country, well, possibly in the world, subscription has come to mean some kind of additional fee for usage, and that's
right.
That's a convention of the media world that we live in.
Right.
To us, subscription just means what it's supposed to mean, which is I receive content from. There's no charge to any other user to subscribe to a channel.
Right.
You simply it's like putting yourself on a list to receive this content, much like your Google Mail notification feature.
Well,
so it's free to everyone to participate, and it's open to everyone to participate. If I want to subscribe to your channel, then I'm allowed to do that. Now, as the creator of the channel, you can block users, so that makes you invisible to each other. Perhaps someone is harassing you, or maybe you just don't like them for whatever
right.
reason, and then you become invisible to each other, and they right. can't see you at all.
Right.
You can also create private posts. Any kind of content that you can create privately, which means only the list of people that you've put on your private list can view that content.
It's like getting into a club. You're on the list, you're not on the list. You get in, you
That's exactly it, right. So I might want to enter a post about my birthday party, which is being held at, you know, this such and such location with this specific address.
Right.
But I don't want the world to show up at my doorstep.
Right.
So I'll put that in a private post, and then, you know, add you to my private list so that you can see it.
Okay, let me try to understand this maybe one more time through the in terms of the access to this material. Anyone who knows that the Utopia Media Channel exists can subscribe to it and receive everything that I post to it. By the way, can multiple people post to the same channel?
At the moment, no, we
okay.
don't set permissions to open. We prefer in the first phase of the release to have every channel
okay.
be controlled by one person.
Right.
You can link to content and post it on your own channel, and you can certainly message inside of the application and say, hey, so and so, you should, you know, put this on your channel, that sort of thing.
So we could have aggregations of individuals who can say we're the blue channel or something.
That's right.
And,
we're a collective,
and say refer to go visit these other ones as well.
That's right. So in that respect, it works a lot like blogging.
Okay. Again, though, then there's neither a charge nor a way to charge people for accessing a channel.
That's not true. There is a way to charge them. It's called premium billing.
Okay, so how does that work, that premium billing?
Right. So let's say you are the Paris Hilton channel.
Right.
And,
or the Utopia and Media, the two big competitors, as I see
that's
it.
That's right.
For
yeah,
this space, Paris Hilton
I've
and Utopia
that,
Media.
Right. Whenever I search for one, I always get the other two.
That's right.
But that's right. So if Utopia Media is a big channel, you may have on that certain content that is a function of your self-expression. In a commercial sense, you might consider it to be promotional,
right?
Or you know, sort of the stuff you give away
right.
to get someone hooked on you know something expensive
to build brand awareness,
which is a perfectly reasonable model. I've talked to a number of authors who are starting to create a new art form in my opinion, which is sort of the mobile novel,
right?
Which is very short kind of chapters, and all of them are saying the same thing. You know, it's a 12 chapter long novel, and I charge for the 12th chapter. You know, it's free until you want to see the twist at the end.
Oh, okay.
And then you got to pay me $1, you know, that sort of
right.
thing. And so, you know, premium content.
And are these novels as text or photos or?
It's a combination, but mainly these are writers who are looking to explore a new medium for their their chosen skill.
Okay, because there's really no limit, and we're not going to even have space here to talk about all of them, but it seems to me there was an older novelistic tradition called the epistolatory novel, in which I think Pamela is a good example. It's a novel in the form of letters.
Right.
But we're talking about here is a novel in the form of photographs, audio clips, and video clips that are constituted the same way.
Could be. And text, you know, which is fine.
Right, and text as well.
Right. So, yeah, you might choose to put a price tag on a piece of content that you deem to be premium.
Right.
You might offer a preview of it or a sort of a summary, and then when a user wants to view it in its entirety, a little pop-up comes up that says, you know, you're about to spend $1, right? Yes.
Right.
Okay, then here it comes.
Now, and after that pop-up that comes up and says you're about to spend $1, how do the users accede to that request and indicate that they're willing to do it, and how are they billed?
The same way they're paying for Ravel in the first place. It goes right on your phone bill, and you see it at the end of the month.
So, and then the phone companies collect it.
That's right. So this is a very near frictionless billing mechanism. You don't have to take out your wallet and pull out your credit card and interrupt your purchase flow by doing it that way.
And it's a frictionless collection service for the creators then, isn't it? That they get a check at the end of the month from the carrier?
Well, it sort of works that way. This is the reason that it's not in 1.0 of the application.
Right.
Premium billing. Once you get over the amount that a user is already spending on their bill. So let's say you spend $50 per month on your phone bill.
Right.
Premium billing can decrement that amount if people are essentially putting money in your tip jar.
Right.
It's an accounting maneuver for the carrier to simply charge you less at the end of the month. You've essentially made money that way. To actually get a check written to you requires integration with a third-party billing system, which we're currently doing, as a matter of fact, so that you receive the equivalent of a PayPal addition, to your account, a credit to your account, that sort of thing.
Okay, so that's going to be there in 6 months or so.
That's right, and that would be at this moment we're anticipating it. That's going to be an offline experience for the user, so you won't be able to access whatever amount of money you're making from the handset. It will go to a third party service provider, and you. You'll go view that, from whatever interface that you're provided for that, and that's how you'd see premium billing.
Would this essentially work also as a barter system, where you essentially make money on your content that you instituted premium billing for, and so do other people, and that money could essentially go back and forth within that economy, like frequent flyer miles?
There's no reason why it couldn't work that way.
And at the end of the month, if you've been viewed more than you view, you end up getting a check.
Yeah, possibly. It's difficult to discuss in any sort of real terms because we never anticipate it to be to go very far beyond a personal publishing platform. When you start to add the layer of economic incentive and gain and that sort of thing, you get into a very difficult to model area, and frankly it's never been done before.
So
pushing the envelope in that respect.
Right. So you don't imagine that NBC Universal and News Corp will empower some of their individuals to do this and put out CNN level news clips and charge for them.
I envision that happening, and in fact, we see a better example of that is with the deals we're doing with record labels,
right.
Where an artist like Aslan or Acceptance, the band, are setting up channels, and then when they're traveling on the road, a way for them to keep in touch with their user base is to simply blog about it, take pictures,
right.
And that sort of thing. Their user base likes that. If they can then sell a mobile relevant piece of media, maybe a ringtone or something like that,
right.
From their channel, then that's that storefront is a very valuable way for the record label to connect with a user base in the context of the artist that they're, you know, a fan of.
Because, in fact, it can work in both directions, essentially. A garage band could start building brand awareness for itself by sets the camera up in the garage and shows everyone, and then everybody flocks to the channel, and they go to the record label and say, we're big guys, sign a contract with us. But at the same time, established bands can use this, as you've just said, to publicize their tours and connect to places to buy tickets and CDs and T-shirts and the whole gamut, isn't that? It can go in both directions, can it?
Absolutely true, and we're doing both.
Okay. Why don't we talk a little bit about the company? Is it privately held, publicly traded? What's that situation?
No, we are a privately held company. We were established about this time last year, and we've been building the platform, which took a bit of doing, and the first consumer product, Ravel, will be launching hopefully later this month. We're given the indication that testing may be done by then, but you know, sometime in the next few weeks, anyway.
Okay. Do you see much competition on the horizon, or if this space takes off, you're going to own it?
Hard to say, frankly. I wouldn't want to display too much hubris and say we're so far ahead of the market.
I mean, right.
Anytime you think you are, there's always two guys in a garage who are way ahead of you, right?
So, right.
I think that it's a space that is largely unrecognized and therefore underserved, but that's not to say that there aren't other companies who are probably looking at it. I think as a general rule, I see a lot more money, you know, investment and interest flowing into the consumption side of media, ergo the cell phone as video distribution platform, and I see a lot less attention given to the media production aspect of these devices, which is perfectly fine with me. The longer it takes everyone to figure out that it's a big opportunity, I think the faster we can move, and the farther ahead of everyone else will be.
Okay. Well, people who listen to this program on Etopia Media will be that much further ahead of everyone else as well, both as producers and consumers of this material. I want to thank you for talking to us today on Etopia Media Broadband Wireless Access World, and wish you continued success as you go forward with this.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.